The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various online sources. First up, from nfb.org, celebrate World Braille Day. Braille is a code that enables us to read with our fingertips using a system of 6 raised dots. It was created in 1824 by a French boy named Louis Braille, who was born January 4, 1809. Today, Braille is used all over the world in many languages. Each year, we work to get Braille into the hands of more blind people. January 4th marks World Braille Day in celebration of its creator, Louis Comfort Braille. Every day, thousands of blind people use Braille for everything from shopping lists to labels for canned goods, from reading novels to solving math and scientific equations, from learning a piece of music to composing one. The increasing availability of Braille signs makes it easier for blind people to get around hotels, office buildings, government facilities, university campuses, and more. Braille is as flexible as print, can be learned in roughly the same amount of time, and can be read just as fluidly. Braille certification. Under a contract with the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled, we offer courses in literary, mathematics, and music Braille transcribing. Each course teaches students how to transcribe print materials of their subject into Braille or proofread transcribed Braille materials. Upon completion of the course, students will receive a certificate in their discipline. To register for our Braille certification training program, please visit the Braille certification webpage hot link or call us at 410-659-8913, extension 2510. Learning Braille at any age. Braille is beneficial because it offers blind people independence, confidence, and flexibility in our daily lives. We offer resources to encourage blind people at every stage of their Braille journey, from learning to practicing to implementation. No matter the age, you are never too young or too old to learn Braille. Jamie Crane, a blind parent of a blind child, joined the Braille Readers Are Leaders contest in her 30s after years of uncertainty about how useful the code would be for her. The contest, sponsored by the American Action Fund for Blind Children and Adults, in partnership with the National Federation of the Blind, promotes the joy of reading to develop Braille literacy skills. Learn more about Jamie's journey with Braille at the hot link. Read our blog, All Braille Readers Are Leaders, A Blind Parent's Journey. 216 Ways Braille is Useful. To celebrate Louis Braille's 216th birthday, we came up with 216 ways that Braille is useful. Reading, writing, drawing, tactile QR codes, learning to spell, learning math, building confidence, having read-along sessions with kids, Monopoly and other board games, Uno. You can read the full list at the hot link. ShareBraille.day. We are excited to celebrate World Braille Day with the URL www.braille.day that directs people to this page. We gave you 216 ways that Braille is useful in your daily life. Did we miss any? Join us in sharing this URL in your social media posts. To continue this conversation, tag us on Facebook using National Federation of the Blind. Tag us on Mastodon at nationsblind at nfb.org.social. That's at nationsblind at nfb.org.social. And tag us on X, formerly known as Twitter, using at @NFB_voice. Thank you. Your help to promote Braille is critical to our mission. Please consider making a contribution to get more Braille in the hands of blind people. Together we transform dreams into reality. There's a hot link for the contribution. Next, from ACB.org, American Council of the Blind announces partnership with Dot Inc. to expand access to multi-line Braille technology, posted January 5th. For immediate release, contact Scott Thornhill, Executive Director, 202-467-5081. Email sthornhill at acb.org. American Council of the Blind announces partnership with Dot Inc. to expand access to multi-line Braille technology. Dateline Alexandria, Virginia. The American Council of the Blind, ACB, is proud to announce a new partnership with Dot Inc., a leader in innovative Braille technology that will expand access to multi-line Braille and reinforce ACB's long-standing commitment to Braille literacy and accessibility. Through this partnership, ACB members are eligible for an exclusive $300 discount on the purchase of the Dot Pad X, Dot Inc.'s new groundbreaking multi-line Braille display. The Dot Pad X represents a major advancement in Braille technology, allowing users to read and interact with content in ways that go beyond traditional single-line displays. This partnership reflects ACB's commitment to Braille and its importance for people who are blind or have low vision, said ACB Executive Director Scott Thornhill. Multi-line Braille technology like the Dot Pad X has the potential to transform education, employment, and independent access to information, and ACB is proud to be at the forefront of these advancements. In addition to the member discount, Dot Inc. will make a donation to ACB for each Dot Pad X purchased by an ACB member. These donations will support ACB's advocacy, programs, and initiatives that promote Braille literacy, accessibility, and equal opportunity. By combining direct savings for our members with a donation that strengthens ACB's mission, this partnership creates both immediate and long-term value for our community, Thornhill added. ACB and Dot Inc. will also collaborate on future outreach, education, and storytelling efforts, including case studies highlighting how multi-line Braille technology can improve access to information and daily life for people who are blind or have low vision. To learn more about the Dot Pad X, visit https://www.dotincorp.com/en/product/DotPadX. About the American Council of the Blind. The American Council of the Blind is a national, member-driven consumer organization representing Americans who are blind or have low vision. With 65 affiliates, ACB strives to increase independence, security, equality of opportunity, and to improve the quality of life for all people who are blind or have low vision. For more information, visit www.acb.org. From the January issue of the Braille Monitor at nfb.org. Changing Words, Changing Minds, Changing the World, by Gary Wunder, W-U-N-D-E-R. For as long as there have been people, there have been ideas about blindness. Some are kind, some are cruel, and many are simply wrong. A sighted stranger may gush that a blind person who travels independently is inspirational. Another may think they are being helpful by insisting on doing what we as blind people can do perfectly well alone. Blind people themselves may sometimes doubt their own potential, not because of any lack of skill, but because of the weight of the messages they've absorbed from childhood. It is tempting to say that change comes from teaching people the right words. Avoid this phrase, use that one instead. Language does matter. It sets boundaries for what can be imagined and what cannot. But real change is more than words. If a person says visually challenged, visually impaired, or visually handicapped instead of blind, yet still believes blind people cannot work, marry, or raise children, then nothing of importance has changed. The deeper work is not just how to refine how people speak, but to transform what they believe. Surface change versus deep change. Psychologists often distinguish among compliance, identification, and internalization. Compliance happens when people change their outward words or actions because they feel pressure. Identification happens when they imitate a group they wish to join. Internalization is the deepest form of change. A belief becomes part of a person's identity. The field of blindness shows all three. A person might stop telling offensive jokes about blindness because they fear criticism. This is compliance. They might start using respectful terms because their friends do. This is identification. But only when they truly accept that blind people are equal participants in society will they reach internalization. The challenge for us is not just to stop offensive words, but to nurture the conditions for deep change. We want people to see blind people differently, not just talk differently in public. How change happens. History offers encouragement. In living memory, blind people were routinely excluded from schools, professions, and civic life. Employers assumed blindness meant unemployability. Colleges denied admission. Parents of blind children were urged to expect little. Today, this landscape is different. The white cane laws in the states and the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act provide protection, but more importantly, expectations have shifted. Blind lawyers argue cases before the Supreme Court. Blind engineers design software used worldwide. Blind parents raise children who never doubt the capacity of their parents. None of this was common just a few generations ago. Change came because blind people themselves insisted that it could. The Federation challenged assumptions through advocacy, lawsuits, and personal examples. Each blind person who traveled independently, who excelled in a classroom, or who succeeded on the job made it harder for society to cling to outdated beliefs. But there is more. Individual effort must join with collective action. One blind teacher suing for her right to work could win a personal victory, but when hundreds of blind teachers come together, supported by the infrastructure of the Federation, we transformed the profession itself. One blind person advocating for white cane recognition could change a single encounter with law enforcement, but when blind people in many states organized, we established white cane laws that recognize the rights of blind pedestrians everywhere. This is the lesson. Individuals are absolutely necessary, but individuals acting together with a common purpose and a structure to sustain their fight can move mountains. The power of language and its limits. We must be clear, language can open doors, but it is not the whole journey. If a teacher switches from saying handicapped to student with vision loss, or even blind student, but still steers blind children away from advanced classes, the words are hollow. If a company writes diversity statements but never hires blind applicants, the commitment is empty. Words are signals, and they matter because they shape expectations. Yet words must be matched with action. That is why the Federation does not stop with language reform, but insists on equal access, full participation, and high expectations. The role and responsibility each of us. It is natural for blind people to value privacy. Not everyone wants to be on stage all the time. Sometimes we want to run errands without questions, ride a bus without commentary, or simply live without being seen as an example. That desire is reasonable, and privacy is part of human dignity. Yet here is another vital part of the truth. Attitude change must fall to each of us. Every encounter with the public is an opportunity to shift perception. When a child sees a blind person using a cane with confidence, when coworkers hear a blind employee solve a problem, or when a neighbor observes a blind parent organizing a school fundraiser, those moments are lessons that ripple outward. We may not always want to be blindness ambassadors, but if privacy always outweighs the chance to educate, then change will stall. We will live with less progress and more frustration than we want. Seen another way, though, public interaction is not a burden, but a cherished opportunity. Each time we explain, demonstrate, or simply live our lives with confidence, we invest in a future where the next blind person faces fewer barriers. We should work to feel in our hearts that there is no such thing as a stupid question, but rather that each question is a chance to inform us with a polite and dignified answer that not only speaks to an issue of blindness, but also to the civility on which good communication and the building of relationships is based. Why authorship should not be a barrier. Sometimes our work faces skepticism not because of what we say, but because of who says it. An article submitted to a professional journal may be dismissed simply because it comes from the National Federation of the Blind, as though our firsthand experience makes us less credible rather than more. Yet history shows that truth does not always come from official credentials. Rachel Carson, a marine biologist, was dismissed by chemical companies when she warned of the dangers of pesticides. Her book, Silent Spring, changed environmental policy worldwide. Rosa Parks was not a legal scholar, but by refusing to give up her bus seat, she reshaped the law. Ordinary people, when persistent and clear, have changed nations. Blind people are experts on blindness. Research by blind scholars and testimony from blind workers are not biased detours from objectivity. They are essential evidence. If reviewers dismiss our work because of its source, that reveals more about their bias than our merit. How we reach the public and decision makers. Academia is not the only gatekeeper of truth. Change spreads when ideas move beyond scholarly journals and enter everyday conversation. The Federation has shown again and again that the public can be reached. Here are just a few examples. White cane awareness. Once blindness laws varied wildly, and few drivers knew to yield to blind pedestrians. Through coordinated Federation advocacy, white cane laws spread across the country, changing not only statutes, but everyday driver behavior. Blind teachers. In the mid-20th century, many school districts refused to hire blind teachers. The Federation's lawsuits, testimony, and collective insistence changed that landscape. Today, blind teachers instruct at every level of education. Technology access. The Federation has pushed relentlessly to ensure that websites, software, and devices are accessible. One person's complaint could be ignored, but thousands of voices coordinated forced companies to change their design. Beyond these major efforts, the way forward is familiar, and here are some ways we individually and collectively continue our progress. Tell our stories. Personal accounts of success, struggle, and ordinary life undercut stereotypes more effectively than statistics alone. Be visible. The more the public encounters blind people as colleagues, leaders, parents, and neighbors, the less space there is for outdated assumptions. Use accessible media. Blogs, podcasts, community talks, and mainstream press reach audiences far beyond conference rooms. Connect to values people already hold. Most people believe in fairness, opportunity, and community. We frame blindness not as tragedy, but as part of the human family, demanding equal treatment. Model the change. When blind people themselves expect equality, live it, and teach it to each other, sighted people take notice. What real change looks like. We know we are making progress when people stop catching themselves mid-sentence to substitute a polite word, and instead truly understand that blind people can and do live full lives. We know change has happened when a hiring manager does not just avoid discriminatory language, but also hires and promotes blind workers. We know it when a blind child grows up never doubting she can be a scientist, musician, or parent. Words open the door. Belief and action walk through it. A call to action. Changing attitudes is not the work of experts alone. It belongs to each of us, but it becomes most powerful when we act together. When we speak up, when we write, and when we live openly as blind people expecting equality, we educate and make change. When we join our voices in the Federation, we amplify those lessons into laws, policies, and cultural norms that endure. Change begins with individuals, but individuals united with infrastructure, purpose, and persistence change the world. This is why we so often say, let's go build the National Federation of the Blind, and why so many of us act each and every day to do it. From the BBC.com, visually impaired gamers urge industry to improve accessibility. Gamers in a group for blind and partially sighted players have called for industry leaders to do more to make them feel included. The group, founded through the Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, was created to give individuals a space to connect over their shared passion for video games. Belfast man Tiernan Devine, 21, who is blind, said he enjoys audio text-based games on his mobile phone, but would love more console games he can play. Louise Meek, M-E-E-K-E, who has cerebral palsy and is partially sighted, said the group has been a huge social boost for her and is a place where players can recommend accessible games to each other based on their level of vision. Tiernan was born with no vision in his left eye and later lost vision in his right eye as a teenager. When I had a bit of sight in my right eye, I used to love playing games like Mario Kart on the handheld Nintendo DS. Now, with no vision, I enjoy playing audio games on mobile devices, games without visuals that rely solely on sound and text. I really enjoy fantasy games, games that have great stories and excellent audio with detailed descriptions. That's just me. Tiernan got involved with the group through the RNIB and said they meet regularly to discuss what games they are playing. Tiernan explained that developers of all video games conduct beta testing and would benefit from having people with disabilities involved in that process to help ensure the game is accessible to as many people as possible. Many people who are visually impaired use screen readers to explain what's on their computer or mobile phone screens, so I would love to see something like that included in most video games. For me, I love Star Wars, so I would love to play a game where I am in a dogfight in space with the Empire. And it would be great to be told how many Star Destroyers and TIE Fighters there are. All you would need to do is add a voiceover, a voice describing what is happening, to a lot of these games. It wouldn't be too hard. Gaming group like a second family. Louise, who is from County Down and enjoys playing PlayStation 5, said she enjoys a wide range of game genres, including platformers like Crash Bandicoot and the sandbox survival game Minecraft, but often has to adjust her TV settings to play many video games. I have to put the contrast way up on my TV sometimes to see the visuals better. I would love it if you could tell the game your level of vision and it would have presets to adjust the game for you, she said. Joining the group was initially daunting, she admitted, but it quickly became a source of friendship and support, describing it as a second family. I've even met someone who has the same condition as me, but it affects her on the opposite side of her body, so we say we are like twins, Louise said. That was really special, she added. Louise said she would love more people with visual impairments to get involved in video games and be able to enjoy them. Progress made, but barriers remain. An estimated 3 billion people worldwide regularly play video games, and the business is thought to be worth twice as much as film and music industries combined. The UK's games industry employs an estimated 76,000 people and is thought to bring about £6 billion a year to the UK economy. In a statement, the Association for UK Interactive Entertainment, UKIE, the trade body for the UK games industry, said the industry takes accessibility seriously and has invested millions in accessible design. While progress has been made, blind and partially sighted players still face barriers, and there is more to learn and improve, they said. UKIE said games are now being released with meaningful consideration given to accessibility. Titles such as Assassin's Creed Shadows, EA Sports FC 26, and Doom the Dark Ages have raised expectations across the sector by going above and beyond in accessible design, it said. With an estimated 250 million gamers worldwide identifying as visually impaired, accessibility is both a major commercial opportunity and an essential industry priority, UKIE said. It added that the industry is working to ensure everyone has the opportunity to enjoy the creative and social experiences that video games offer. From GiantBomb.com, Steve Saylor's Accessibility All-Stars of 2025, posted on New Year's Day. Steve Saylor is an accessibility consult and advocate. You can follow him on Twitch or a bunch of different social medias. As we close the chapter that is 2025, a bunch of us have been looking back this year on Giant Bomb and making lists about games we loved or whatever weird list Mike or Dan is guaranteed to write. I wanted to show a spotlight on accessibility a bit, if you'll indulge me. Accessibility has been something I've been personally advocating for going on 10 years as of 2025. I've seen a lot of games become more accessible in the past 10 years, and more studios are starting to add accessibility for the first time. We are not anywhere near the point where every game is accessible, but there is progress. To showcase that progress, the Swiss will not be a "this came at all these features for accessibility." But I'm going to focus on one feature that the game had that is pushing the industry forward toward greater accessibility. Not only is it good for disabled players, but it's good for all players. It's like my own take on the Game Awards innovation and in accessibility. What did these games do that innovates and tries new things that haven't been tried before? Let's find out. Assassin's Creed Shadows. Ubisoft is well known at this point to have a ton of accessibility settings in their games. All across multiple franchises, everything from Far Cry, Star Wars, and Assassin's Creed, AC Shadows was no exception. If you look back at what the franchise started with, where the first Assassin's Creed game didn't even have subtitles, to see where Shadows has come is miles ahead. So what did AC Shadows do that was innovative? It's what they did with navigating the open world. Open world games are one of the genres that are not accessible to disabled players. More specifically, it is not accessible to blind players. The reason is that it is difficult for a blind person to navigate from point A to point B, where both point A and point B are decided by the player, and there is no golden path forward to those points. Because part of the appeal of open-world games is their freedom of exploration, how do you do that but still make it accessible? Well, AC Shadows attempted to make their open-world setting more accessible by including screen readers and audio cues to let players find their own paths. It's not perfect, mind you, but it's the closest we've ever gotten to having an accessible open-world game. One of the things the game did was whenever a point of interest is chosen on the map, which is navigable via a menu system which is easier for screen readers, when you look at the compass at the top of the screen, if that point of interest icon is in the center of that compass, the screen reader will read the name of that objective and say how many meters away it is. And because when the point of interest is in the center of the compass, the camera moves to point the player in the direction where they should go. It sadly doesn't account for elevation, whether the POI is above or below you. That's still something that has yet to be solved fully, but we have in Shadows Ubisoft should be applauded for. Atomfall. Speaking of freedom of exploration, Atomfall is another one of those games that attempted to make open worlds more accessible. Where AC Shadows attempted to use screen readers, Atomfall attempts to use audio cues. One of the more innovative features they did was how to let a player know where an enemy is, especially if you can't see them or if they are off camera but nearby. This game has a feature where you can have an audio cue start when the player is within range or melee distance to the player, and it increases in volume the closer the enemy is to the player. Think of it like an always-running radar. It has directional sound, too, so you can know where the enemy is in relation to where the player is in the world. That, and combined with a unique blind aim assist, where a series of clicks will let the player know whether they are aiming their weapon close to or on the enemy target, which was hugely inspired by Sea of Thieves, which also has that feature. Those two combined, along with the game's exploration customization options, can help close the gaps and make these action games more accessible. South of Midnight. If there was one game that was a personal and accessible favorite for me, it would be South of Midnight. This game had everything I wanted in a game. It had an amazing story and world building. The music was incredible, and several songs were stuck in my head long after I rolled credits. It was a unique idea and surprised me in many ways, which included accessibility. I wasn't sure what this game would have based on the previews we saw of this game leading up to launch, but once I started it and looked at all the accessibility it had, I was very impressed. But one feature that I was really impressed by was the ability to skip combat encounters, boss encounters, and chase sequences. You might argue that by skipping these negates the whole point of the game, but I would argue that it gave a ton of freedom for players to enjoy the game how they wanted. If they liked the combat but didn't like chase sequences, you can change that. If you struggle with the combat but love the thrill of the chase, then you can change that. Or if you just aren't great at boss fights but enjoy the regular combat and chase sequences, you can change that. Or all of the above. Or none of the above. I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next week. I'm Dorside Reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.